to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome to our show. It's Thursday, getting almost to the end of the week here. And, of course, for a lot of people, tomorrow is a holiday. It is Good Friday. And I think Passover is tomorrow night as well. I don't remember. I used to keep track of all those things during my first marriage, of course, but now I've kind of like lost track of all of that stuff. Anyway, the stock market, let's start with that. The stock market ended the week in a very up situation. It opened almost 200 points up and stayed pretty much there the entire day. It closed 246 up. It's back in the 8,000s, and everyone's cheering. Yes, it's the fifth week of gains and so forth and so on. And it looks really good. And people are saying, oh, yes, this is a sign the economy has turned around and is heading back up. Now, apparently, if you go and read the financial news, they're saying that the reason the stocks went up, they were led by the banking stocks, financial institution stocks, which are still, you know, they're getting all these bailouts. And I keep telling you, the Dow Industrial Average right now, it's not a measure of the health of the whole economy. It's a gas gauge on how much money is flowing from the public treasury to these financial institutions. And the financial reporters were reporting today that mostly today's rally or surge or whatever you want to call it was the result of Wells Fargo forecasting a nearly $3 billion quarterly profit. And they're saying, oh, the bank's sector is stabilizing and so forth and so on, and it sounds really good. But only yesterday, the U.S. government announced that bank-owned insurance companies are now eligible for bailout money. So if you're a bank and you've got an insurance company, like AIG's an insurance company, and that was in trouble, now you can get bailout money to put it back on its feet. Wells Fargo has an insurance division. And between that and the loosening of the mark-to-market accounting, which was announced very quietly a couple of weeks ago, we may be seeing, you know, it's all on paper. They're forecasting a $3 billion quarterly profit. No guarantee that that forecast is going to be accurate. No guarantee that that forecast isn't mostly based on some very creative bookkeeping coming out of the mark-to-market rule change and the fact that if you own an insurance company, you're getting more bailout money. So that's what's going on there. And like I said, you know, and even the financial news reporters are saying, you know, the financial news tends to be bad, but boy, that Dow is really going up. So that's become the banner. That has become the banner of the Obama administration. And it's hardly surprising because the same thing was going on during the Clinton years. They kept shoving that Dow higher and higher and higher, and their motto was, it's the economy, stupid. And they kept pushing that thing up as high as they could because that became the flag. Wave that Dow to prove how great things were going. And they ended up and they said, hey, we've got a huge, but we're ending our administration with a huge budget surplus. And then once they're gone, we find out what they'd really done was looted the Social Security Trust Fund. The cash set aside for the baby boomers' retirements had been basically spent as general revenues. And that's where they got the budget surplus. They basically spent the pension funds of millions and millions of Americans who are about to retire, are retiring right now, and they're all of a sudden discovering that their Social Security is coming up short. And everyone's talking about a Social Security crisis. Oh, my goodness, Social Security is underfunded. We funded it once already out of our Social Security taxes. The government went and spent it. They looted it. They took it. So I know the Dow is going up. I'm not convinced. I am not convinced. Story came out today. The New York City government is talking about sweeping layoffs of city workers in order to avoid bankruptcy. See, now the economy is beginning to hit the government workers themselves. And all of a sudden, they're going to be a little bit less loyal and fanatical about supporting the government status quo. Yesterday, we were hearing that public sector pension funds are now feeling the pinch. At first, it was the private sector pension funds that were running out of money. Now it's the public sector. The government workers' pension funds are now coming apart at the seams. And that's going to cause a little bit less enthusiasm for the people currently working for the government. But as I said, New York City, they're talking about these major, major, major layoffs. thousands of jobs. They're talking about trying to get the unions to cut back on a bunch of salaries to try and keep from those jobs from just evaporating. They're all running out of money. It's all going into Wall Street. It's all being poured onto the banks. It's being sucked out of every other part of our country to go in there. Folks, they're doing everything wrong. They're taking money from the people who don't have it to give to the people who do. That doesn't make any sense at all if saving the country is the agenda. I'll tell you what we're going to start seeing happening here. And first of all, there's for Saturday, whole bunch of demonstrations and protests are being scheduled across the country to break the banks up, to take them from being these big monolithic, bestriding the nation behemoths with vast appetites for profit, and break them up into neighborhood banks that serve their local community, the way it was a long time ago before we got into these kind of huge, huge messes. But I think what we're going to start seeing now, I think we're going to start seeing an underground economy, because as more and more people are losing their jobs, they're going to start going to their neighbors and they're going to start bartering. You know, I'm growing tomatoes. I'll trade you a bunch of tomatoes for some of your whatever. And they're going to go back and forth. And it's really going to start, you know, growing the underground economy, or the black market, they like to call it. And there's something about the black market you need to understand. It doesn't necessarily mean that there are things being bought and sold that are bad or evil or wicked. It simply means that there is an economy in operation that is removed from government intervention and, more to the point, taxation. Because what is paralyzing the economy is we are overtaxed, and yet we can't get the government to understand that we're running out of money. And raising taxes just slows the economy down even further. Look at California. They just raised their income tax and their sales tax again. They're paying some of the highest taxes in the country, and they're hideously broke and in debt. That's not a taxpayer problem. That's a management problem. That is absolutely a management problem. And it may be for this reason that we had a town in Missouri just reelected their dead mayor. The dead mayor won the election. I understand why. He's not raising taxes. The cost of actually operating the mayor's office has really, really dropped. There are no sex scandals to have to worry about. Frankly, I think electing dead politicians to positions of leadership could actually save this country, but I digress. So we're looking at this, city, municipal governments, they're losing the credit ratings, they're starting to let people go. It is really just, it's just going completely crazy out there, and it doesn't show any signs of slowing. And why the stock market seems to be going up, it's got to be paperwork tricks, bookkeeping tricks. Because we're still seeing factories being closed and the tool sets being auctioned off. They're selling the machinery with which we built this country is being stripped out of these buildings. It's either sold for scrap or sold as antiques, or it's being sold to other countries who will put it to good use, making the things we're going to have to try and buy from them now. So it's, you know, the signs are still bad. I don't believe the economy's turned around. I don't believe we've seen the bottom. I think the worst is still to come, and they're just manipulating the Dow to try and fool you into thinking, hey, everything's great. Let's go out and max out the credit cards and buy a flat panel TV set. Now, one of the people in the chat room is just pointing out that the banks, you know, the reserve banks are lowering their interest rates again, but the commercial banks, the consumer banks, aren't passing that along. They're keeping their rates up. In fact, credit card rates are continuing to climb. And see, these banks are basically trying to, you know, they're getting their money that they're loaning much less expensive, but they're trying to increase rates for us to borrow it from them. They're trying to basically gouge more and more profits. Everybody's getting greedy. And a little bit of greed, it's not a bad thing. You know, I think a lot of people right now are wishing, in hindsight, they'd been a little bit more greedy and stashed a little bit more away for the rainy day which came. But, you know, the bottom line is, for most Americans, we didn't think our own government was going to sell us out. We didn't think our own government was going to give tax breaks to corporations to make it easy to send our jobs to other countries. Who could possibly have expected or predicted that? We're going to take a break here. Join us on the air, 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. We will be right back.
is Cascadia Public Radio.
Some are maxed out all their credit cards. Some are working two jobs and living in cars. Minimum wage won't pay for a roof, won't pay for a drink. If you gotta have fruit, distract yourself, Mr. CEO. See how far 5:15 an hour will go. Take a part-time job at one of your stores. I bet you can't make it here anymore.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show here. And just a reminder that Donovan is in the control room waiting to pounce on the phone. The moment it rings, our number, as always, is 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. We are now approaching the end of week one of the Thermite Watch. And what I mean by that, it has been almost a week since the Open Chemical Physics Journal's article, peer-reviewed scientific article confirming the presence of thermite in the ruins of the World Trade Towers, basically went viral on the blogosphere. We all started talking about it a week ago. It's been quoted and linked all over the place. Everybody on the internet and the blogs and alternative radio, they know about this story. Thermite has been confirmed in the wreckage of the World Trade Towers. We have yet to see a single mention of this story on any of the TV networks or the major newspapers or the large corporate-owned media like Clear Channel. And even just to bring it on and ridicule it and say, oh, those crazy scientists over there at the Open Chemical Physics Journal, they're just a bunch of loony, wacko conspiracy people with aluminum foil wrapped down their head. Absolute pretending the story does not exist. We're going to keep it current. Every week we're going to do another week of our Thermite Watch. We're going to keep an eye out. If you see anybody in the corporate traditional media talking about the presence of thermite in the World Trade Towers, let me know about it. But as long as we go on and we don't see or hear a mention about that, I'm going to keep pointing that fact out, that we have here a major story about 9/11, and nobody wants to talk about it. Ooh. Now, getting back to the economy here, there was an article that came out. It's linked to whatreallyhappened.com today, and it said basically revive Lincoln's monetary policy in open letter to President Obama. Now, the short version is the monetary system we are currently using under the Federal Reserve is this Federal Reserve, which is a private bank, prints up paper money, which is backed by pretty much nothing, and they loan it to the U.S. government for use in the economy. And they loan it to the government at interest. And banks, you know, they don't give away money, except to themselves. And it was not always that way. When the country was started, the Treasury, the government itself, had the authority to make and issue money and put it into circulation. Now, back during the Civil War, now this was before the current Federal Reserve, but there were other banks operating back then who had gotten permission to issue their own banknotes in circulation. And again, like the present Federal Reserve, when the government borrowed those notes from the banks, there was an interest attached to them. Now, the bankers in Lincoln's day, they had Lincoln's government basically over a barrel. They were the only source for financing for the Civil War, and they were charging an interest rate of 24 to 36% on the money they were going to loan to Lincoln for the Civil War. So Lincoln basically said, you know, under the Constitution, the government's got the power to issue their own money. We're a sovereign government. We're just going to print up our own money. And they did. And it was called the greenback. That's the origin of the term, the greenback. It was Lincoln's currency that was put into circulation during the Civil War. And it was based on a unit of worth. Its value was defined in terms of goods and services. That's what it was backed with. And it put it out there. And not only, you know, they won the Civil War, and they were able to repair a lot of the financial damage that the North had been suffering leading up to the Civil War. The system was so good. The system was so good that after the end of the Civil War, there was a tremendous amount of public pressure to make the greenback the permanent money supply for the United States of America. Unfortunately, Abraham Lincoln was shot and killed, and as soon as he was dead, the greenbacks were withdrawn from circulation, and the U.S. went back to the system where the government allowed a private bank to print up the money and issue it and loan it to the government at interest. Now, fast forward to John F. Kennedy, and he issued Executive Order 11110 that authorized the Treasury Department to start printing up their own currency called the United States Note. It was a revival of the silver certificate, and it was backed by the silver that was still in the U.S. Treasury at that time. And they put these into circulation, and again, it was a monetary system that did not depend on a privately owned bank. It was issued by the government, and it had a tremendous change on the economy of the United States, because all of a sudden the government wasn't simply racking up huge amounts of debt simply to put paper money on the streets, as had been the case. And again, unfortunately, as soon as John F. Kennedy was assassinated, the U.S. notes, the United States notes, were pulled from circulation. We went back on the Federal Reserve notes. And the very next year, the last of the silver coinage, which had been in common usage at that time, was withdrawn and replaced with these copper-clad slugs, these worthless bits of gas station tokens that we are using to this very, very day. And as a side note, and not trying to equate Lincoln and Kennedy with Adolf Hitler, but the way Adolf Hitler got Germany out of the hyperinflation of the Weimar Republic was exactly the same thing. They stopped using these bank-issued banknotes, interest-bearing, and Hitler issued his own new currency that was defined in value relative to so many hours of, or so many minutes, actually, of a German laborer's worth. In other words, the monetary unit was based on work as a unit of value. And it turned Germany's economy around. It was for this reason that Hitler was Time Magazine's Man of the Year, because he literally revitalized Germany's economy by the simple expedient of issuing his own currency and not continuing to use these banknotes created by the banks and lent at interest. This, of course, did not go over very well with the bankers. And starting in 1933, I'm going to go into this in a little bit more detail further on the show. In 1933, the bankers of the world basically united and said, Germany's the bad guy, Germany has to go, hate Germany, hate Germany, hate Germany. And just, you saw headlines around the world like Judea declares war on Germany, trying to organize a global boycott against Germany to wreck that new economy before people saw how well it worked for them. And basically set the stage for World War II. And so I understand people are saying to Barack Obama, you need to go back, revitalize the government's function of issuing currency and issuing money. It's supposed to be a government function, not that of a private bank. Unfortunately, when there's that much money involved, the bankers have a tendency, to act like spoiled brats. They don't want to give up this free ride that they've had for all these years since 1913. And as history shows, bad things happen to people who challenge the profits of the big banking cartels. And that is definitely a situation. We're going to go to the phones. We've only got a minute. Chris in Oklahoma, welcome to the show. Actually, we're going to have to take the commercial break here. So hang on the phone, Chris. We're going to go to you as soon as we come back from these words from our sponsors. This is the What Really Happened radio show. I'm your host, Mike Rivero. We'll be back really, really soon. Phone number is 800-259-9231.
GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN, great talk radio starts here.
Aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We're going to go right to the phones. We've got Chris in Oklahoma. Aloha, Chris. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind tonight?
Hey, Mike. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to let you know that Elaine Jarvik with the Deseret News, and I was corrected by my co-host on the pronunciation of that. It's actually a major paper out of Salt Lake City, did carry an article, and you're probably aware of it, with Stephen Jones, and actually doing a very objective job uncovering his work as a co-author of the paper with the Physics Journal. Mm-hmm. And actually, I was on the phone with her 2 days ago and invited her to come on the show that I co-host, as you know, Radio Free Oklahoma.
Yes.
She had tactfully declined. She said that she was felt more comfortable being the interviewer versus the interviewee. And I says, you know, whether you realize it or not, Ms. Jarvik, 5 or 10 years down the road, you are going to be commended in spades in a good way for the stand that you took and the position you took on actually giving Dr. Jones and his colleagues a fair shake on this subject. And she was really very, you know, humbled about that. She really didn't know that that's the take on it. And it's just, you're one of three reporters that I know that even took the time to cover this subject. So I just want to let you know it was on the homepage of 911truth.org about 2 days ago. If you scroll down, it's about mm-hmm. the third or fourth story down. And just to let your listeners know, and you're right. I mean, it's far and few between of the coverage on that story.
Well, I know a lot of small independent papers, you know, are starting to mention it because it is all over the internet. And once it is, to not cover it becomes obvious. But my concern, of course, is, you know, with the networks, ABC, CBS,
yeah.
NBC, Fox, you know, because they've got the audience. Is it being reported in the New York Times? Is it being reported in the Washington Post, the San Francisco Chronicle, the big city papers in the big urban areas? And it's nice that some of the smaller papers are covering it. I mean, we do have some small independent newspapers like the Hartford Courant that are willing to go out and tell the people what they really need to know. But the big corporate traditional media, those are the ones I'm watching, and I'm basically hurling the defy at them, and they're beginning to like budge. As I said the other day, I was rather surprised the local Star Bulletin ran a letter I sent them about the TSA's effect on our tourism. So they're beginning to kind of budge. Unfortunately, the editorial person who put my letter in the paper, that was their last day on that job, so I sort of caught them at a good moment, I guess. But
You made a good point, Michael. I appreciate it. I'll get off the air. I know you've got other callers on the line, so keep up the good work.
All right. Well, thanks an awful lot. And, yeah, there are some small independent media out there, and they are on the rise. And that is the whole thing. We're in this transitionary period. When the United States, you know, was a very young country, before the creation of corporations and all the rest of the stuff, media was very small. There was a town newspaper. In larger cities, there were two or three newspapers. And it was intentionally decided early on that no one company would be allowed to control all of the media in any one city, because they had seen how easy it was for a vested political interest to literally take control of an entire city and their voters by only presenting them one point of view. So as a general rule of thumb, as our society evolved, there were laws in place that said you cannot own too many newspapers in one city, you cannot own too many radio stations in one city. We want it broken up into small, regional, locally aware and involved media companies that are taking care of their local communities. And that way, everybody, they've got a choice. They can go out. If they don't like what this newspaper is saying, they can go and buy the newspaper from the boy on the opposite corner, and they'll get a different perspective. Starting back in the Clinton years, in fact, I think it started a little bit before that, but certainly in the Clinton years, we began to see all these laws that preserved the diversity of opinion in the media just rescinded. And all of a sudden, you know, these corporations showed up that just started buying everything. And the government kept making these deals. In fact, it does go back even earlier than that, because there was an implied bargain during Desert Storm. If you toe the government's line, we will rescind certain laws that prevent you from enlarging your media empires. And so it really began back then. And ever since then, that's been the deal. Support the government's agenda. We will rescind the laws that prevent you from buying more media. And these few media corporations are then therefore allowed to buy it all up, as Clear Channel has done on the radio. But people are very much aware that's what happened, and they're turning away from the big media. And we're hearing day after day that the so-called stars of the conservative talk radio circuit are losing their audiences. People are getting tired of the constant rants that they hear from people like Michael Savage. And they want to go out and they want to hear a wide variety of different ideas, so they can sit there and say, what makes the best sense to me? And I think one of the fundamental changes that we're seeing, we're getting away from that media that presumes to tell you what you're going to think and how you're going to feel about it, and this is what's important today, and that is not. And we're getting back to what the media used to originally be in this country, where you go around the dial or around the channel or through the pages, and you see several different points of view, and you decide for yourself which one is right. And what it really comes down to is a sense of trust. And I don't mean whether you trust any given radio host or me, and certainly don't. I'm not asking you to, because I can make mistakes like anybody else. But whether the media trusts you, the audience. There is some media, and I don't need to mention names, they will talk at you in a manner which makes it very clear they don't trust you to think for yourself and to make up your own mind. They'll give you a bunch of information, and they'll say, this is what it means, and this is what you should think about it. And they don't want to take the chance that you might actually step back and say, wait a minute, that doesn't make sense to me. And then you have the new media coming on, which I think is very much typified by the idea that we're going to trust the audience. We know you're smart. We know you're educated. We know you're aware. We don't need to tell you what to think. We're just going to give you the information you need to know. You make up your own mind. And then you go out and you do whatever you feel you need to do to make a better life for yourself and your family and do good for your community. And that is a new evolution that we're getting. So we're starting to see these small independent newspapers and the small radio stations, the Part 15, the Voice of Radio Free Oklahoma. These stations are coming on and they're finding an audience because Americans are really, they're getting tired of that big, huge, monolithic, multi-lettered ministry of truth that's always trying to sell them another war, so forth and so on. Anyway, off of that soapbox, because I'm almost out of time on this. Boy, these shows go by so fast. Now, speaking of propaganda and the corporate media, we've been hearing for the last couple of days about this so-called pirate attack, the Somalia pirates. And frankly, it's almost beginning to look like the gang that couldn't shoot straight. These pirates supposedly grabbed this ship, and then we get news while the U.S. crew is back in control of the ship, and the pirates are off in a lifeboat with the captain, and the lifeboat has run out of gas, and the U.S. ship is just sitting there, and the U.S. warship shows up and doesn't have anybody to shoot at, so now they're going back to a friendly port, and the FBI is over there trying to talk these losers in the lifeboat who've run out of gas to surrender the captain alive so it'll all be over. And we see Hillary Clinton holding these press conferences and these photo ops to look like, you know, we're going to deal with this. This is the first attack by pirates on an American ship in so many blah, 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 blah years. And I think the immediate conclusion most people are coming to is, are we planning to evade Somalia? Was this the manufactured provocation? Because, frankly, it wasn't very credible. You know, if they'd kept the whole ship and it was a hostage situation, then you've got some media. But the ship is safe, the crew is safe, the captain, yeah, he's in a lifeboat with the pirates sitting there in the middle of the ocean trying to bluff their way to fame, fortune, and freedom. But it looks to me like this was a staged event to generate publicity for a new war somewhere in Somalia where they got a lot of natural resources that the U.S. would like to have, and it fizzled. It's not turned into the huge newsworthy event they want it. And so everybody's trying to do photo ops and trying to milk it, but it didn't get any traction. So that's my sense of the pirate attack. It's not a very believable pirate attack. It's something like out of the Pirates of the Caribbean series from Disney. This is the latest one. Pirates of the Caribbean, rusting hulls in Somalia or something like that. We're going to take another break here. Join us on the air, 800-259-9231. We'll be back with the last segment of our show after these words from our sponsors.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program. Call Mike now at 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the last segment of today's show here. There has been a lot of talk about the new Pentagon budget. When it first came out, they were saying, well, we're cutting this weapon system and we're cutting that weapon system and we're just, you know, we're just seeing all these cutbacks and we're not going to do the second laser plane prototype and so forth and so on. Then we finally get to look at the numbers and we realize the defense budget of Barack Obama is actually larger than those of George Bush. There's just a lot more money out there. It's just being repurposed. And a careful analysis of the budget, and in fact, Defense Secretary Robert Gates is saying the new budget is set up and is funding those parts of the American defense establishment in anticipation of an endless series of Iraq and Afghanistan-style wars by the United States. Folks, they are planning to start more of these wars in the Mideast. Obviously, Iran is in the sights. They're planning it. They're spending your money on it. They're going to kill your kids in it, is really what's going on. And, you know, it is just frightening to think of the absolute disconnect that we are seeing with our current crop of political leaders, because here is the real world. I know when you're in all those marble palaces on Sodom on the Potomac, and you have got all this taxpayer money just pouring at you like it's from a fire hose, and it's easy to convince yourself that everything is okay and that all of this talk about lost jobs and foreclosed homes and stuff, it's just people complaining. They're just being a bunch of whiners and we don't have to pay attention. We're still the greatest nation on earth and we're going to go out and prove how butch we are by slapping some brown people around. And I guess they just convince themselves that they are demigods because of the lavish lifestyles that they enjoy at our expense. And that it's just not really that big a deal what's going on out here in flyover country. But the reality is that if we get into a major prolonged war in the Middle East and Russia comes in on the other side, as it most likely will when Iran is attacked, we're going to lose this one. You know, everyone's talking about the potential of a third world war. And I know the conventional wisdom in Washington, D.C. is we got out of the crash of 1904 in World War I. We got out of the crash of 1929 in World War II. And we're going to get out of the crash in 2008 by getting into World War III. But there's a huge, huge, huge difference. One, our economy is a shambles. Every level of our society is in debt. All of our municipal governments they're losing their creditworthiness ratings. New York hovers on the verge of bankruptcy. California is not far behind. Every state is in recession. Everybody is broke. There is no money out here. It's all been collected together into this really huge little pile in New York. All the money is there. It's nowhere else out here. And the other situation is, you know, we can't afford to pay for a war. We don't have the money to pay for a war. We don't. It's just not here. Second, even if we had the money to pay for a war, we don't have the industrial capacity. And that is really the problem with getting into a new major war. We are not the industrial powerhouse that we were in 1904 and 1929, where there were factories sitting empty just ready to be reactivated and turned into war production. We don't have that anymore. Our factories are empty. The machinery has been stripped, sold for scrap, sold for antiques, sold to other countries. Those large factory buildings you see dotting the landscape, rusting slowly in the wind, as it were, they're empty. They're just empty buildings. There's nothing inside. We do not have the industrial capacity to sustain the level of production it takes to fight a major war. If we continue this war policy in the Middle East, and if we get into war with Iran, it will mean war with Russia, and we will lose. Because we don't have the industrial capacity to support that war. Wishful thinking does not win wars. Courageous soldiers and bullets don't win wars. Wars are won with planning, intelligence, and logistics. Knowing what the enemy is going to do, knowing where you need to be to confront them, and getting your men and materiel to that location before the enemy does. That's how you win a war. Doesn't sound glamorous. They don't make movies about it, but that's the reality. Phonies talk about bombs, bullets, and air battles. Professional soldiers talk about logistics, getting the stuff where it needs to be, when it needs to be. So this whole idea that this new Pentagon budget, which is spending even more of the money that we don't have to get ready for this endless series of Iraq and Afghanistan-style wars, it signals a really, really bad future for the United States. They really are going to go on attacking every country they can to try and conquer their way out of this financial mess. We're either going to conquer somebody with so much money that we can buy our way out of the mess, or we're going to simply conquer and kill the people we owe money to. Either combination of the two will be fine, I'm sure, as far as our government is concerned. Meanwhile, the Pentagon just concluded a special war game last month that was focused on economic warfare, how foreign nations might try and destroy the U.S. economy by deliberate manipulation. Sort of like Bernie Madoff, but with a more hostile intent. And they said this scenario was made all the more real by the current global financial crisis. And as near as I can tell, I mean, it's not like we need an enemy trying to ruin our economy. Our own government did a really wonderful job of it when they sent all of our jobs to other countries. But I think the whole purpose of this war game and announcing it and talking about it is to pre-sell the idea that our economic woes in this country really aren't the fault of the U.S. government. There's a villain out there. There's a bad country out there that is doing this to us. It's one of the Arabs, or it's going to be China. They're looking for a scapegoat. They're looking for a scapegoat. The economy is going to get worse despite the Dow. They're already looking for somebody they can blame it on. Oh, it's those danged Iranian hackers who did it. They brought down our banking system. Or it's those Iranians, they wouldn't sell us their oil for cheap enough money. Or it was those Saudis, they just charged too much for that gasoline that really should have been ours to begin with anyway. Or it's the Chinese, they destroyed our economy with super notes by filling the Walmart with this really inexpensive stuff and destroyed our economy that way. And it's nonsense, it really is. The party that was responsible for the economic policy of the United States of America is the United States government. And we are in the mess that we are in because administration after administration after administration, thinking only about the next election and never about the far-off future, they simply sold out. They took money from the Federal Reserve or from other financial interests to change the rules so the rich could get richer and the poor could get poorer. And that's why we're here today. The reason we had this incredible run-up of derivatives and mortgage problems was because in 1999, the U.S. Congress revoked the Glass-Steagall Act, which had been passed to prevent precisely this kind of problem from happening. But, you know, those lobbyists, they got all this money they've gotten from these financial institutions, and they whine and they dine the Congress critters. And if they're Charlie Wilson, they just throw booze and women at them, and they can just basically get whatever they want. Congress goes back into session and says, yes, we don't need regulation anymore. We trust the bankers and the financial institutions and the mortgage companies. And the Federal Reserve, they would never, ever do anything to harm the country. Never, ever, ever. So we'll deregulate. We'll revoke all the controls. We'll take away all the safeguards. We'll tell the SEC, you don't need to investigate Stanford Financial, and you don't need to investigate Bernie Madoff, and you don't need to investigate all the dozens of others pyramid schemes that we're now reading about have been operating for the last 15 to 20 years. Somebody called the SEC off of all of those. And it was great for the financial institutions, and it was great for the sharpsters and con artists and pyramid operators, and it was great for the congressmen who are getting all these campaign donations from them. But it wasn't good for the American people. And that's where we get down to the fact that our system of government, of economy, of politics in the United States is broken. Because a system must take care of all of its components, not just a few. It's only taking care of a few at the expense of the rest. It's not a system anymore. It's pillage. It's looting. And on that happy note, we'll be back tomorrow for our Good Friday show, or our maybe not so Good Friday show, depending upon how the economy looks, talking about all sorts of Good Friday nice type things here. So until then, stay safe. Be well. Hug your loved ones. Drive very carefully. A lot of crazy people out there. A lot of road rage. And aloha, America.